second leg of this travel odyssey that started last week, of course, with Monmouth and the Haskell. Then was supposed to be here for yesterday and today, but, of course, the cancellation in advance of the temperatures got a different concern, I would imagine, and that is heavy weather. In fact, last year when I was here, we had that violent storm come through, right? And in fact, I can add that yesterday, after we wrapped up from beautiful Keswick, just unbelievable Keswick Hall, and you know, near Charlottesville, and a just incredibly gracious resort that is in the midst of expanding and morphing and adding. We'll get a chance at some point to talk to Rob McNamara, who got quite sick, actually, and feel terrible that Rob couldn't join us yesterday. But as soon as he snaps back, we'll get him on, because I want to tell you more about the facility. One thing I didn't mention yesterday that I got to slip in. There is a Jean-Georges restaurant on site. And in fact, Jean-Georges is in charge of all the food service at the facility. And a place called Marigold. Tina and I had a dinner on Sunday night that was... I mean, when I tell you exquisite, I can't even, that doesn't do it justice. So this whole trip has been pretty magical, even with the weather concerns and cancellations. Last week, of course, in Jersey, and now here, and we're going to work our way through. Tomorrow, you'll hear Seth Merrow co-hosting and or basically hosting. I think Chuck Simon is going to come hang out as well. And so Chuck and Seth tomorrow from Saratoga, while Tina and I take the opportunity to see the pony swim at Chincoteague tomorrow morning. About 8:30 to 11 is when it occurs. So we're going to, I don't think the ponies, considering they're swimming across the channel, I don't think they care if it rains, but everybody else might. So we'll see what happens. But really looking forward to that. And then Thursday at Delaware Park and Friday at Saratoga. So a really kind of a fun week. And we're trying to make the most of these travels. And that included yesterday, after we wrapped up at Keswick, and before we came toward Williamsburg and toward Colonial, I said to Tina, I said, you know, we're 10 minutes from Monticello, and you know, she had never seen it. Now, I had not been there since I was a kid, and only had, you know, the certain recollections, actually, by the time we got there. But we went to Monticello yesterday and toured, and actually we were kept in the basement for a half an hour while a violent storm came through, and they did not want to let anybody out on the grounds for the period until this. And there were apparently 70 mile an hour wind gusts. And much like last year when we came down here, you know, they had the same kind of storm hit here last year. It's summer, and you get that. We get it. We'll get some at Saratoga. Hasn't happened yet, per se, but it will. It always does. So looking forward to a fun morning here. We're going to visit with Kate Dalton in about 10 or 15 minutes. And, of course, last Wednesday, the first jump race of the season at Saratoga. And Kate and husband Bernie, they win the Grade 1 AP Smithwick. What a great way. You know, we talked to, you know, various trainers about starting their, you know, starting the meet off right and starting the season well. You can't start a jump season better than the Daltons did with Down Royal, the mare. And I'll go out on a limb. I cannot recall, this is maybe a question for Woodbury Payne. Wood will be here later as well to steward the two jump races. But and Kate's got one in today. But I cannot recall a period of time where you had two, you know, grade one against the males over the hurdles at the same time between the Mean Queen and the eight-year-old Alphabet Soup mare Down Royal. That, you know, not only does Bernie ride and Kate train, but also bred by them. And so it's an amazing story, really. And you know, last year there were a couple of third place votes that I utilized for the Eclipse Awards that came under fire a little bit. Down Royal was one of them. Behind Snap Judgment, Snap Decision, who runs here tomorrow on the flat, which is an interesting story in itself, the rescheduled Colonial Cup. But I used my third vote. You know, a lot of times I'll use the third place vote in the Eclipse Awards to acknowledge a horse that you know, is not going to be champion, but had a great season. And that's what I felt about Down Royal last year. She was 3-for-4. And, I thought it was worth including the PPAC at Far Hills. And I thought it was worth acknowledging. So I give those kinds of nods. The other one was Papa Cap that Andy Serling, who will join us at 11, that Andy never lets me forget. And I'm quite happy with my Papa Cap as the third place vote for the two-year-old champion last year. I think we might talk to Mark Cassie, in fact, today, later. But anyway, Kate Dalton will be here in the next little while, and I'm looking forward. I know Kate's been on, but it's been a long time. And this is a really a celebratory circumstance to win the grade one, the Smithwick. So we'll catch up, I suppose. I mean, I should have told her to bring Bernie, too, if I hadn't. That is only occurring to me now. All right. In addition to Kate Dalton in person, we will have a parade of the Colonial Downs team, and that will include Jill Byrne. We'll get an update from Jill on the progress of this very rich season and this expanded Colonial Downs season. More money, more racing, more fun, more winning, more everything. So Jill will be by, and I suppose Jason Beam, before he has to get busy, and Jessica Paquette, as well. So the Colonial team will parade through here. Aaron Wellman, as mentioned, Aaron Wellman from Eclipse, and very productive weekend in Saratoga for the Eclipse team. You win the Grade One Coaching Club of America Oaks, and I will continue to call it by its original name, the Coaching Club of America. The Coaching Club of America Oaks. And I did see a picture. I think I did see the picture, of the coach, the driver, the coach and four, etc. You know, the carriage wagon that the coaching team that that comes in for the CCA Oaks. It's I don't know at what point it morphed into from Coaching Club of America Oaks to Coaching Club American Oaks. That's worth researching. But the win by Nest that was so strong and so resounding, will be the number one topic with Aaron. But they also came back on Sunday with a very nice practical joke, two-year-old winner as well. So Aaron Wellman, who lives around Del Mar, spent opening weekend from Del Mar at Saratoga. Kind of funny. So normally, of course, things would have already been open at Del Mar under normal circumstances. And speaking, by the way, of opening weekend at Del Mar, and we can also mention, as I said yesterday, hadn't really looked at, you know, the handle numbers and those kinds of things, but it was a tremendous weekend. I mean, Del Mar opened absolutely smashingly and record opening handle, but it didn't take away from anybody else. Saratoga had a great weekend, even with some of the, you know, certainly the, you know, the situation with the race that had to be declared a no contest, but that resulted in, you know, tons of refunds. But great day at Monmouth on Saturday, and you know, still in its early stages, but the fixed odds program, you know, continues to grow. It's going to be slow. Don't kid ourselves that you know, that this thing is going to, you know, be an overnight sensation, or you know, instantly get the kind of critical mass that it's going to need. But you have to start somewhere, right? So very good weekend on that front. There's plenty of other things to do, but Kate Dalton is able to, I think, to, you want to join us? Come grab a chair. I'm not gonna make you sit here. You can take a headset, or you can take the mic, whichever you prefer. All right. Yeah. No, the headset's probably a little better. There you go. Other way. That's it. Well, it's always fun, more fun, and a particular pleasure when we can have these kinds of conversations in person. It's one of the reasons we go to the racetracks. And last Wednesday, an unusual circumstance to have the, you know, the Smithwick be the first race of the Saratoga season, and here is the 8-year-old mare that you and Bernie bred. I told everybody, you know, before you came in, in fact, that I had a couple of people question my adding her to the Eclipse ballot as the number three. You know, nobody questioned that it wasn't going to be the Mean Queen and Snap Decision 1-2. But I thought she had a terrific year last year, 3-for-4, including the P-Pack. And when she turned up in the entries, Kate, I thought, she, you know, maybe there isn't a lot of options, but you don't enter her in that spot, you know, on a complete lark. And then she turned in a career best performance.
Yeah, it was definitely a career best performance as far as I'm concerned. You know, the method in the madness was she had run very well at Iroquois this May and won the race, and she came out of Iroquois just, I mean, coming over the door. She was delighted with herself. She was training really well. She looked tremendous, and we didn't really have a whole lot of options for her. We were trying to kind of keep her quiet and, you know, wait for the Randy Rouse here at Colonial, which is the end of August, and she was just not waiting. So, you know, Bernie and I started talking because obviously she is 8. This is her final year of racing, and, you know, she had done so well last year, as you say, you know, and, you know, she's not very well bred. She's by, you know, alphabet soup out of a high yield mare. It's pretty, you know, and she's a steeplechaser, which makes her somewhat worthless in this country. But, you know, we thought maybe we could run our eyeballs out at Saratoga because she was in such good form and snag a piece of it and be stakes placed, you know, and get some black type. And literally that was why we were going. We thought, you know, if we could be third and get a little bit of black type for her, that would be really great. And it worked out better than we ever could have hoped of. I mean, neither of us were expecting that. But, you know, Bernie adores that mare. That mare has been like Bernie's child ever since she was born. And, I mean, even he was completely blown away.
You mentioned the high yield mare, Miss Crown, and before we talk about her career arc and things, you know, just Chase news and Dalton Stable news in general, I'm guessing Alphabet Soup would have been at McMahon at the time.
Correct. Yeah. Miss Crown was boarded at McMahon's in Saratoga, and yeah, as it turned out, we had bred her a couple of times, and you know, had a foal on the ground and that, and as it happened, Bernie had started riding Italian Wedding for Jonathan Shepherd, who was in Alphabet Soup. And meanwhile, Alphabet Soup went and stood at McMahon's for a season.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we were sort of like, oh, who are we going to breed her to this year? You know, I don't know. I don't have any great ideas. And, you know, so there's Alphabet Soup standing there looking at us as Bernie's, you know, doing fairly well on Italian Wedding. And, you know, it just sort of seemed like a no-brainer smacking us in the face.
It's very funny because we had a filly of our own that was retiring, and my thought was Alphabet Soup, but and that program was in coordination with Adina Springs, and so when we submitted our filly, Ausable Chasm, Frank Stronach himself said, "You need to overbreed this mare." And he said, "I recommend Macho Uno." So we ended up shipping to Kentucky, and Macho covered her and produced a wonderful Carlisle Belle, who made $120,000, and you know, had a great career. Was a Hickory filly, not a big filly, but so because I had thought Alphabet Soup, you know, for $5,000 was a, you know, was logical, was a, you know, was an austere and good match. It's kind of funny. So I know exactly the moment that this decision making was going on.
It's funny how things work out. You know, you put all this time and thought into nicks and pedigrees, and you know, and then the one that you're like, oh, gee, look, that stallion's just right across the aisle. I'll just breed it. We'll try that one. You know, and you end up with a grade one winner. So there you go. I mean, you know, they say even a blind squirrel finds a nut.
Well, right, and every stallion gets at least one good horse. You didn't really go on with Miss Crown though as a broodmare.
She actually she has been put down. Yeah, unfortunately, she had an E Dubai the year after Down Royal. She had an E Dubai colt who was a wobbler. And so we put him down. Yeah, I know. This is the game, isn't it? And then she was back in foal to Big Brown, and she aborted at, you know, 7 months. She aborted the foal, and it was messy, and she was no longer going to be breedable. And, yeah, it turned into a whole messy thing, and we ended up, we lost her.
That's tough.
So, yeah. There you go. But she leaves Down Royal as her legacy.
Well, and that's what's amazing. And you know, it's funny. You look at your statistics are funny when you look up. I'm using ABR, America's Bros Record, and they're only showing her flat stats, not her chasing stats. You know, what's notable about this too? I mean, the I think the horse we probably talked about the last time, Kate, you were on was Diplomat,
right?
That
yep.
won the Turf Riders.
Turf Riders, yep.
So you've won both the Grade Ones at Saratoga now,
nearly by accident, but yes.
That's not true. That's not true, because everybody knows what a great job you and Bernie do. You know, in terms of her career, and you mentioned, you know, that she's an 8-year-old, and you know, she's run 23 times.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you've as we talk so often with the Clancys and with Bill Gallo and Woodbury when he's on to talk chasing, it's a funny calendar for fillies and mares. It's not as, you know, it's not as distinct, and so you have to kind of bob and weave.
Yes, you know, we have found a lot of success personally with the filly and mares running against the boys, but I'm lucky in that Bernie is a very light jockey, and so it's no problem. You know, I can put a filly in against the boys, they get 10 pounds off, and that's not an issue for Bernie, and it, you know, usually helps the filly. But yeah, it is, it's kind of a funny, it's a little bit of a funny calendar. For instance, this year with Down Royal, when we were kind of trying to map it out, we had the race at Iroquois in May, and then there was the Randy Rouse in the end of August, and then there was the PPAC at Far Hills. in October, and that was sort of your lot. That was all she was eligible for as far as the restricted filly stakes. And so, yeah, like you said, you sort of start flying by the seat of your pants.
And you know, in terms of her development, and you know, she is a horse that you've run on the flat, and for, you know, explain that process in terms of using, like, in fact, this Colonial Cup here tomorrow, you know, to see Snap mm-hmm. Decision show up in there, kind of raised eyebrows. But explain how, when those of us at whether it's here or at, you know, even at Delaware Park sometimes, Monmouth, and, of course, Saratoga, the jumpers show up in the entries in, you know, mile and three-eighth, mile and a half, you know, as quote unquote training races, but certainly, you know, certainly Jonathan Shepherd won his share of those. Fisher has, you know, there's been, I'm sure you have.
You know, I think it's like anything. These jumpers, we have to work them that far anyway, because, you know, they're running 2 miles, you know, 2 and 3/4, 2.5 miles, things like that. And so we have to do big, long, strong pieces of work. And a lot of times it's easier just to put them in a race and give them a day out because, you know, they're board training. I mean, you know, a lot of these, for instance, Down Royal, she's 8 years old. She gets tired of just going left-handed in a circle at home. You know, she likes to get on the trailer and go for a day out. And I think a lot of people use a flat race as a, you know, as a day out and a bit of fun, something different for the horse, pick them up a little bit. And, you know, if you get a little bit of money, bonus.
When you look back, particularly at 2019 and 2020, she went a period where she wasn't winning and even, you know, was marginally even competitive. What goes through, you know, the mindset when you're at that point, and then all of a sudden, at age 7 last year, she gets into the career best form.
Yeah, it was so oddly enough. Here you go again with the weird thing that's fate. She was fairly moderate. I mean, you know, she was doing okay. She was running around in the restricted filly races and finishing, you know, second and third and doing fine. But she certainly wasn't lighting the world on fire. But she's pretty and she's gray and she's a good mover. And we had actually decided to retire her. At the end of 2020, we decided to retire her, and we were going to send her to a friend of ours to make up into a show horse for us because we thought she was worth a little bit of money as a show horse. And as it happened, when we had turned her out, you know, we'd given her a break, turned her out, she got nice and big and fat, and we had brought her back in, and I told my friend, look, I'll start jogging her, and then I'll send her up to you. Okay, great. Well, my friend ended up going to Ireland and got stuck because of COVID. She couldn't come back. And so meanwhile, we're back in Camden jogging Down Royal, jogging. Down Royal's getting fresher and fitter. You know, Bernie started kind of like cantering her a little bit because she was, you know, getting all delighted with herself. And meanwhile, you know, my friend still couldn't get back from Ireland. And so, you know, Bernie looked at me one day and he's like, I'm putting her back in training.
It's that simple.
Yeah, it's that simple. And she's just never looked back. You know, we had discussed taking her off of Lasix,
which Joe Clancy wrote about last week.
Yes.
And became, and it's funny because this weekend there was quite a bit of off on Lasix at Monmouth and at Saratoga. And I wanted you to go venture down that path.
Yep. So, you know, at this point, you know, Bernie said to me, look, I really think we should run this filly without Lasix. She works at home really well, and she's not the same filly when I get her, you know, she's not the same filly in the afternoon as she is in the morning without Lasix. And I said, well, you know, we don't have anything to lose. We were going to retire her.
Yeah, exactly.
So we took her off Lasix at Queen's Cup in the beginning of 2021. And, it was pouring rain that day as it happened. It was, you know, it was just bucketed rain all morning and it was cold and raw. And she ended up winning that day. But I didn't put it down to anything other than that, you know, she likes soft ground, and, you know, there you go, we got lucky, whatever. And, but, of course, you know, once they win, you do something, you change something, you put blinkers on, and you take them off Lasix, and then they go and win. Well, you know, you can't very well change it. So we've just left her without the Lasix, and she hasn't looked back.
In your experience, because you basically, I mean, you and Bernie have been Been operating how long?
Since 2005.
So, you know, you've got the breadth of the, even, you know, more than the breadth of experience with Lasix. And what do you notice, or what, you know, for a horse that doesn't use, and I mean, there's plenty of examples of this. I mean, Kenny McPeak talks about it, and you know, not starting one with Lasix, and obviously it's going to be more and more of a topic here going forward. What's your general philosophy, and how do you determine, you know, if one, in this case, it seems like it just naturally happened, but I mean, talk about the, you know, the effect that people talk about the water loss, essentially.
I think, you know, obviously Lasix dehydrates them.
Yeah.
That's what it's supposed to do. And I think generally, I think that doesn't bother most of them. But, you know, I think there's a couple that it does, you know, that they don't have a peak performance when they're dehydrated. It just flattens them a little bit. I mean, in Down Royal's case, it seems like it makes her one paced. She seems like all of a sudden, since we've taken her off Lasix, she suddenly has a kick at the end of the race that she, you know, definitely did not have prior when she was on Lasix. She, you know, she looked useful enough, but she was always very, very one-paced, and she would run on the front end because she couldn't quicken at all. You know, and now all of a sudden we can sit in with her and come running, which is, you know, it's like having a whole new horse. It's pretty bizarre.
Well, and she won the Henley at Nashville in May to start the season. And in fact, the PPAC win also on the, you know, on the lead, and then on Wednesday, I looked up and she was coming with this furious finish, and she gobbled up ground. And what's interesting is, you know, suddenly she's a horse that is also versatile enough to be successful on the chase course on the flat, as well as, you know, over the hunt courses.
Yeah, you know, trust me, nobody was more surprised than I was. never in a million years did we think she was fast enough to finish around Saratoga. We really didn't. I mean, we just wanted a piece of black type. That was
unbelievable.
We got so much more.
Unbelievable. The purse doesn't hurt, and adding another grade one to the resume, and the fact that you guys bred her is also just, to me, part of what makes this so sweet. Do you get breeder awards for this?
We do.
You do,
apparently.
Mailbox money, as we say.
Hey, you know,
that check is going to show up that you didn't necessarily think about.
No, it was, you know, none of this was thought about going into the Smithwick. Really, we, you know.
Too funny. Kate Dalton is with us, and she, of course, is on site. And you know, that's actually part of the intrigue is the way that all of the chase outfits, you know, have to van it around, and you got to have good tires and good torque on the pickup truck.
Yeah, no, we do. We log a lot of miles. We're, you know, Colonial on a Monday and Saratoga on a Wednesday, generally. Fortunately, our horses are most of the time good shippers, because if they're not good shippers, they don't tend to work out so much as the steeplechasers, because, yeah, the part of the game is definitely shipping up and down the road.
Talk about the operation and you know, how many horses, and then, of course, there's Bernie's role in this, where he picks up mounts, you know, for other outfits.
Yeah, you know, we operate out of Camden, South Carolina. We're at the Springdale Training Center, which is where they hold the Carolina Cup every year. It's a beautiful training center. It's kind of a little hidden gem in South Carolina. We have really great facilities. We've got a couple of dirt tracks. We've got starting gates. We've got loads and loads of turf gallops, which is really nice. There's, you know, woods and trails through the woods and, you know, logs that you can hop. Obviously, there's hurdles everywhere. It's a very ideal place. And as far as our operation goes, we sort of split the year. We have our steeplechase horses, which is, you know, sort of my gig. And we also break babies for the flat track for other trainers. We really enjoy doing that. And it works out very well with the steeplechasers because, you know, the steeplechasers are kind of hot and heavy from March through October. And the babies sort of come in October, and they're generally leaving to go to their trainers at the track, you know, the end of April, beginning of May. So it's sort of a very nice wax and wane kind of a thing. So we really enjoy doing that. We break yearlings for a few people, and, you know, in the wintertime when we're a little quieter, and this time of year, obviously, we don't have any babies. You know, it's just sort of all the steeplechasers hanging out in South Carolina. And, it works really well. And, I mean, Bernie's great. If anybody who knows Bernie will tell you he can ride absolutely anything, literally. I mean, he's ridden some really tough, really famous horses over the years, you know, for flat trainers, for Kieran McLaughlin, for Mark Henning, even for Tommy Skiffington. He's amazing. I mean, I've learned so much even just watching Bernie. I remember the first day I ever saw, one of the first times I ever saw Bernie ride, he was on a colt of Mark Henning's. And Mark Henning had the old barn in Saratoga, sort of down by Lucas's at the back of the Phipps kitchen. And I was walking behind Bernie to the track, and he was on this Tomorrow's Cat colt. And the colt got to the horse path by Shug McGahee's barn, and it reared up on its hind legs, and it proceeded to walk the entire way down that horse path, which is a fairly long horse path. It hopped the whole way on its hind legs, and Bernie never even moved a muscle. I mean, you know, he was, you know, giving it the double thump with his, you know, but I mean, this horse just reared up. I mean, and it was straight up in the air and hopped the whole way down the horse path, and Bernie never even, there wasn't even a hair out of place, and went down, went to the track, and off it went. And I remember being behind him and thinking, whoa, who is that guy?
So that's before you guys.
Oh yeah. It was before we started dating.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Point Given famous for doing that.
Yes. Oh my gosh. We saw Point Given a few times too in Saratoga. He was quite an athlete.
He would go up and walk that way too.
Yes, he would.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And every hot walker's nightmare.
Yes.
that's a perfect segue into the Kate and Bernie Dalton story. Your background, what got you, you've got the, frankly, you, Kate, you've got the, I've always thought you have the equestrian look about you, so to speak.
Yeah, I got on my first pony when I was three, and I've just, you know, the inside joke is I've never gotten off. My parents kept kind of hoping I would grow out of it, and it just never happened. I've been horse crazy my whole life, and came by it only because our neighbors had horses when we were growing up. My parents had nothing to do with horses, thought they were dirty and smelly. And
Pennsylvania or?
Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that's what, yeah.
Yep, Bucks County. And I guess the way my parents tell it, they say that, you know, when I was little, after dinner, my mom would be washing the dishes and my dad would take me out for a little walk and we'd go feed carrots to the neighbor's ponies.
Hmm.
And yeah, I guess I just begged and begged to ride. And the neighbor put me on a horse when I was three. And I just started, I mean, from then on, 5 days a week, quickly went to 7 days a week. And that was me. Oddly enough, I learned how to ride in what was originally Bruce Miller's barn in Bucks County. He had moved to Unionville and a riding stable had taken up residence in his old barn. And, you know, and that's where I learned how to ride. But anyway, Bernie and I met up in Saratoga in 2001. I was working for Jonathan Shepherd and he was working for Kieran McLaughlin, but he would freelance a couple of horses at the back of the annex at the end of the morning. And so, you know, we'd sort of see each other and, you know, pass remarks. And he was usually saying some smart alecky comment to me, which sometimes went straight over my head, but, you know. And yeah, it just kind of went from there. Just, you know, I can remember the first time I went to Saratoga, the assistant for Jonathan Shepherd sitting me down and telling me very specifically not to fall in love in Saratoga. Because that's what funny. Happens in Saratoga always stays in Saratoga. And just whatever you do, Kate, do not go falling in love in Saratoga. And, you know, so, of course, naturally.
That's funny. You skipped from getting on horses and getting some, you know, education. I mean, how'd you end up with Shepherd the first? Your first job, or did you work your way toward Jonathan?
I grew up doing equitation in the show ring, and when I turned 16, I had moved to a different barn, and that barn had some layup horses. You know, they had show horses, but as well they had some layup horses. And the trainer was an old friend of Ralph Rivioso's from Philadelphia at the time, Philadelphia Park. And so I kind of started learning about racehorses. I got to learn how to bandage racehorses and things like that. You know, horses that were, you know, having a little break from the track and they were on layoff. I thought it was really interesting. And one of my friends that was an exercise rider for Eddie Keneally at the track actually said she'd, you know, teach me how to gallop. It was, you know, sort of a lark thing, like, you know, in the back of a cornfield kind of a thing, like pulling your stirrups up, and that sort of a thing, like, I'll teach you how to gallop a racehorse. Well, you know, I was totally hooked at 16. And I remember I went to the racetrack and they introduced me to Ralph Rivioso, who took one look at me and said, "You're never going to be small enough to be a jockey. Just forget it right now." And I was just crushed. And I thought, oh, and, so I went back to the show horses, and somebody said to me, "Well, you know, you should look into the steeplechasers." And I had never even heard of a steeplechaser, which is so ironic because Bucks County is only an hour away from Chester County, which is a huge hub for steeplechasing. But I'd never known anything about pony racing or steeplechasing. And so I started looking into it, and somebody said, "You need to look up Jonathan Shepherd. He's the person that you go to for steeplechasing." And so I called up Jonathan Shepherd and said, "Hey, you know, I'd really like a job." Now, mind you, this is all completely unbeknownst to my parents, who think I'm going to college. So I ended up, I squared away a job with Jonathan Shepherd, and then I told my parents that I wasn't going to college, and whereupon they were about to kick me out of the house anyway. So I moved up to Unionville and started with Jonathan Shepherd when I was 18.
Wow. How long, then you, later on, when you, did you go right from meeting Bernie and getting together with Bernie to starting your own, the stable?
No, there was a couple of years, so Bernie and I got together, I guess, we met in 2001, he went out to Dubai with Kieran McLaughlin that winter, I stayed with Jonathan, and, you know, in 2002, we sort of got back together again at Saratoga, and that year, I kind of decided it seems like this thing's getting a little bit serious. So I decided to go out to Dubai with him, and Kieran McLaughlin gave me a job and said I could ride for him out in Dubai. So we did that, and we came back, and the following winter of 2003, Kieran wasn't going to Dubai. He was going to go to Florida that year, and we were going to go to Florida with him, and Florida just seemed expensive and foreign, and we just kind of couldn't really work it out. And somehow, I said to Bernie, like, "Well, you know, what about Camden? What do you think about Camden, South Carolina?" And Bernie said, "I don't know anything about Camden, South Carolina." And I said, "Well, look, it's not like Aqueduct in the winter. It's not cold.
No.
Bernie hates the cold." And he's like, "Oh, all right, well, you know, we'll give it a shot." And so he got a job for Mickey Prager in Camden, and I got a job for Shadwell. And we did that for 2 years.
Huh.
And then, you know, somewhere around 2005, we picked up a couple of yearlings of our own.
Like
and
that.
when we had our own yearlings, then we kind of started working for ourselves. And one day Bernie came home. He'd been schooling a little bit for a friend. He was freelancing a horse. And she was a big, strong Sea Hero filly. And I guess, you know, they couldn't get a pull out of her. And Bernie started pointing her at some logs to see if that would kind of get her to pay attention, and she started soaring over the logs, and Bernie pulled up and said, oh, tell the owners I'll give them $5,000 for the horse as a joke. Well, yeah, so then he comes home, he was like, we just bought a Sea Hero filly. so it begins.
And from there, and you first started saddling under your name in 2008.
Yes, that sounds right, in New York, I believe, yeah.
And what about clients? How do you balance that part, and what's the mix there?
I don't know how well I balance it. I have great owners. I don't even really know how people sort of find us, but
well, by winning grade ones at Saratoga.
But we have a great balance. I always sort of own a few horses more than I'd like to own myself, but it's part of the game, and you have to accumulate, speculate, and but we do. We have some great owners from all over the place, and they're all very supportive, and it's a really fun business.
Yeah. On that topic, actually, then, and a good segue into this weekend, or this week, I should say, and you got a runner today in the in the second of the two races, 11th in your program, second of the day. We'll talk about that one in a minute, been a tough couple of years overall. I mean, one of the things that Bill Gallo and when we talked to Joe and Sean, we talked to owners and everybody. This has been COVID. It's funny, the racing game as an industry weathered COVID very nicely. You would have thought that the chase community would be able to ride right along with that. But that really did not prove to be the case, because really the hunt meets, those are congregations of people. And yes, there were some things that were run without crowds, but that's not the business model for the steeplechase season. So this has been a very difficult couple of seasons for chasing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the banding together that has happened since COVID has been very amazing, heartwarming. The hunt meets make their money selling tickets. There's no doubt about it. And their tailgating spots. And, obviously COVID brought all that to a grinding halt. It's also gotten really difficult to buy horses because, everybody's sort of hanging on to what they have. It used to be, not too long ago, you could, pick up a pretty nice horse from the flat, at sort of the end of the turf season, no problem. And now it just seems like the horses that you'd kind of want, everybody's kind of hanging on to and keeping a hold of. And everything's just gotten a little bit harder with COVID, but I'm sure it's the same for everybody.
Well, talk about the horse today. In fact, let me go to my program, and I had it, and now I've lost it. Seb's
welcome.
Seb's welcome.
Yeah, he's a grand little horse from he's French bred. He was trained by Andrew Balding in England. Leighton Register is his owner, and he has quite a few horses, I think, with Andrew Balding over the years. And Seb just wasn't cutting the mustard on the flat. Leighton kind of mentioned to me, do you think we'd try him as a jumper? And the French breeding doesn't mean a whole lot to me, but I'd seen the horse run on television and it certainly looked enough like the type. And, so Leighton sent him over about a year ago. I actually had him stabled here at Colonial last year. We were actually looking for a flat race for him, but it just didn't really work out. We did run him one time on the dirt. Then we switched him over to jumping, and he's a grand little horse. He's not over big, but he's got a heart as big as he is, and he's a tough little thing. He won at Foxfield last time out on the front end the whole way, and just would not let the other horse buy him. And he's gritty. I mean, and he really loves to jump. The one really nice thing about steeplechasing that we always say is you can take a horse that's you know, maybe not that great on the flat, but if they really like the jumping, you know, they'll do well at this game. There's a spot for them if they really like to jump.
Well, and it's one of those, I've certainly asked this question, frankly, of Jonathan going back several years, and Tommy Voss as well, about the, and Jack Fisher most recently, but I can ask you too, the auditioning of particularly a young horse, because there's a job for every horse, almost. That's sort of one of those things that I hear people, there's a job for every, no, there's not. There's some that just are so lazy and miserable, they as soon as they figured out someone's going to feed me later, I don't have to do anything. They're going to keep feeding me.
We call them cats.
That's good. When you're auditioning and when somebody says, you know, should we try them over jumps, what's your evaluation process?
You know, we usually, if given our druthers, if the horse is, you know, sort of in our barn at Camden, you start out with some little stuff. We start out with some little logs and things like that and see how they do. And then from the little logs, we go to bigger logs and then small rolls, small foam rolls. And, you know, you just sort of keep progressing from there as the horse likes. Some of them pick it up very quickly and you can move pretty rapidly on them, like African Oil picked it up, I mean, in like 2 days. But, you know, then we've had others that look a little hopeless in the beginning, and they do eventually pick it up, but, I mean, it takes more like 6 months. So it's just, it just depends on every horse. But, you know, once they sort of figure it out and get going to it, they, you know, you can take a horse that was distinctly moderate on the flat and turn them into a grade one winner like Down Royal, and there you go.
And it also you appreciate when you look at her complete resume, you know how much goes into it. I mean, and there's a different. It seems like there's a different patience involved in chasing. You know, part of it is that there's, you know, the winter season off, and you know, so you can let a horse mature. I mean, this is a 4 year old. And the one thing that seems to have happened over this COVID-y period, it does seem like there's a real influx of fresh young stock that everybody has gotten their hands on, and it might be that some other opportunities, whether it's horses coming from abroad or some horses that just have not proven out and fulfilled their potential domestically, have you know, been sourced. It seems like everybody, you know, we talked to Sean about this with River D, and you know, he's always shopping for, you know, but there seems like there's a lot of 4 and 5 year olds, which is a great, you know, groundswell of you know, prospects for long term.
Yeah, no, it is. There's been a lot of 4 year olds, especially this year. We haven't started the 3 year olds yet. They'll start in the fall. But the 4 year olds division, you know, has almost been able to make its own division, which is great. You know, when in the years I think that it can, it's very helpful to have the 4 year olds just sort of run in a group with each other. It's kind of like, you know, you would equate it to like the 2 year old races, you know, in Keeneland and Belmont, you know, spring kind of a thing. Like at least they're all, nobody knows what they're doing, but they're all doing it together.
Exactly. This is an interesting horse, and I'm always curious to hear the process that's involved. And I remember I think it was either Voss or Shepherd saying that they didn't need a fence. They didn't need to have a 4 foot fence. You could just put a small obstacle. And just, I think it was Jonathan said he could just watch the way a horse approached even a small obstacle and the way they went over it, and he could tell right away if it was a horse that was going to have the mechanics that were going to lend itself to jumping.
Yeah, a lot of it is how they approach the fence and size it up. You can tell, you know, so there's the ones that, you know, there's the ones that stop dead and won't go anywhere near it. And then there's the ones that sort of are willing to go, and you can see them, you know, working to figure out how they're going to get from one side to the other. And then there's the third option is the ones that just don't even blink and just blast right through it. And so, yeah, so you can tell a lot, you know, as Jonathan would have said, you know, just, you know, getting them over a little log on the ground, they'll tell you. They'll tell you plenty of information just on doing that.
Well, and one of the elements of this is something that, you know, you can confront the opponents of equine sport with is that they do this in the wild.
Oh, sure.
Readily. And that was one of the funny things when I moved to the Saratoga area and going to Magic Forest and the diving horse. Oh, it's so cruel. Really? They'll do the same thing in the wild. They'll go to a spot to jump into water on their own without anybody teaching them or asking them.
Yeah, I mean, I think things, the diving horses, they, from what I understand, they said the same thing, too, as the jumpers. You know, you can't make them do it if they don't want to do it. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it's a 1,000-pound horse with a 100-pound rider on its back, and you're not, you know, we're certainly not out there, you know, trying to blast these horses that don't want to jump over the jump. The horses that turn out to be steeplechasers love to jump. They want to jump. I mean, you know, this little horse, Seb, it's welcome. Bernie went to school him the other day, and, you know, at home, we do the same thing we do in the races. We show him a hurdle before we jump it, and then we turn around and you know, back up a little bit and then approach the hurdle. And, you know, Bernie showed Seb the hurdle, and he went to turn him around and back him up, and Seb, you know, took off squealing and bucking and, you know, carrying on. Like, you know, the steeplechasers, they love to jump. They love to jump.
It's so much fun to watch. Kate Dalton is joining us. Got a couple more minutes to the top of the hour when we'll break and talk to Aaron Wellman on the other side back in California. But Kate winning the AP Smithwick on Wednesday. And I suppose if we look toward the rest of the Saratoga schedule, you got to run in the Turf Riders now, right?
The Shepherd. It's now a Shepherd.
The Shepherd Turf Riders. That's right. That's right.
Yeah, you know, it was funny. So when I was first, I was cooling out down Royal, and somebody said to me, "Oh, you're coming back for the Shepherd, aren't you?" And I said, "No." That was my immediate response. But yes, obviously, I think we have to consider it. You know, if the mare's in good form. You know, I'm very quick to say that she did ship 2,000 miles by the time she went from South Carolina to New York, and she's now back in South Carolina. That's 2,000 miles, and it's, you know, if we do take on the Shepherd, it's going to be another 2,000 miles up and back. And so, you know, she would definitely have to be telling us that she wants to run again for us to go and run her back in the Shepherd. I'm not just going to blindly say that we're going to, you know, run no matter what in the Shepherd. But if she's in good form and she says she wants to go do something, you know, why not?
Why not is right. How many do you project to run at Saratoga between now and September?
Possibly one more.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, I mean, we really didn't. We didn't have a lot of Saratoga horses this year. You know, we have a couple that are eligible, but they're probably not good enough. Again, it's a big commitment to go from South Carolina to Saratoga. It's much less of a commitment to go from South Carolina to Colonial. So I think most of our horses that we have right now in Camden are gearing towards Colonial Downs.
Well, you know, there's all the ones so far. We've had four, obviously, the that have graduated in maiden race are three. I think three maiden races and one
ratings
and
race.
One rating.
Yep.
There you go. But it's been Arch Kingsley and Kerry Breon
yeah.
only. So you got to kind of break through. But those maiden winners, they're all heading. They're going up for the novice action at Saratoga.
Yeah, yeah. Saratoga's got non-winners or two, and also novice races. So yeah, if you break your maiden here, you can absolutely go up there.
I've got. Let me do this. I can hear an alarm. Do you hear that in the headset? Yeah. All right. That's. I'm surprised. The. the battery. I thought that was the issue. There we go. All right. The power bar. It's been plugged into the power bar the whole time, and the power bar wasn't on. So that's one of those mysteries of science. There you go. So now it is. This is my new equipment, and it's amazing because it's got. I don't have to be plugged in. It's got a 6-hour battery.
No, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and I can go anywhere with it, and also use Wi-Fi. But it needed. I plugged in an hour and a half ago, and wasn't thinking about it, and so there we go.
Well, you fixed it.
Exactly.
No problem. Not a bother.
Right? Unbelievable, Kate. I so looked forward to this, and we'd only ever talked on the phone before. So just a fun opportunity to meet and to have you join us. I did get one question from our friend Tom Herman. Here we go. Let me look. Bernie's horse, Wednesday. Do we know anything about that he's riding? Who's he riding for?
He's riding for Kerry.
Okay.
Yeah, he's riding Spring-Heeled Jim, I believe. And I have not been told anything. You know, Bernie and I are married, so he really doesn't talk to me very much anymore. I did see him watching some of the race tapes of Spring-Heeled Jim the other day before we left to come here to Colonial. The horse looks fairly impressive to me. I mean, he won pretty nicely at Queen's Cup. I believe that was his first time out, as far as I know. And then he came back at, I want to say, at Radnor, which was a really tough day. Radnor was tough. It was very, very hot, and the ground was soft, so I'm told. And I think he was a pretty good fourth in that race, I believe, at Radnor. So I'd say... it looks like a very hot race at Saratoga. That non-1 is a 2. There's a couple really nice, the whole field is really very nice, to be honest. But I'd say Spring-Heeled Jim has every chance, as much as anybody.
This is a serious group. It's a group of 9 tomorrow to open the Saratoga card. And I know Joe will be on tomorrow with Seth Merrill, with that's hosting the show for me. And in addition to Spring-Heeled Jim, who's another 4-year-old, Freddie Flintshire, that Kerry Brion has got and broke the maiden at Charleston. That was a nice horse of the Brendan Walsh had. Yeah, I guess he never broke his maiden on the flat. How about that? But I remember, when he ran because of the name. And Jack Fisher has got a maiden breaker from Nashville, Proven Innocent for Rutan Street, that Stu Janney bred out of Megan's Joy. So a Blame gelding now. Proven Innocent that Shug had. Did break the maiden on the flat going 1.25 miles. Last September, and then was sent in this direction. Probably sold privately, and this is a nice group.
Yeah, there's a lot of well-bred and well-meant horses there. I mean, yeah, Proven Innocent broke his maiden very impressively at Nashville. Welshman was very impressive breaking his maiden.
Also Fisher.
Todd Wyatt's horse is a very nice horse as well. So it should be a great race.
That State of Affair for Mrs. Johnston, and as I've told people before, for those of you that are handicapping tomorrow to play, you're going to see the buyer figures. The buyer figures are germane, not at the country setting, not in the hunt meets, but on the racetrack. When you see horses that 80 buyered, speed is the key when it comes to running here and at Saratoga, and when we're at Delaware or Parks or Monmouth, when those occasions arise. And so horses that were fast on the flat, they've got an advantage when it comes to over hurdles, the national hurdles at the racetrack. Kate, I, total pleasure, and I was so tickled for you guys, for you and Bernie. You guys are incredibly popular and beloved on the racetrack, not just in New York, but everywhere. And thanks so much for this. Get lucky this afternoon.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time to have me on.
Not at all. Kate Dalton and the steeplechase season, the steeplechase summer. Always a focus on at the races, the trip to Saratoga, and the situation to be a Colonial for the first two weekly. And we'll get started 12:10, I think, right? Is that the
12:15?
12:15, yeah, in that range. Let's take a timeout. It's the top of the hour, and we'll come back for hour two. We're live.